You're listening to the ESO Network, your station for all things geek.
It was the year of fire.
The year of destruction.
The year we took back what was ours.
It was the year of rebirth.
The year of great sadness.
The year of pain.
And a year of joy.
It was a new age.
It was the end of history.
It was a year everything changed.
The year is 2261. The place, Babylon 5.
Who am I? I am Susan Ivanova, Commander. Daughter of Andrei and Sophie Ivanov. I am the right hand of vengeance. And the boot that is gonna kick your sorry ass all the way back to Earth. I am death incarnate. And the last living thing that you are ever going to see.
It's over because we've decided it's over. Now get the hell out of our galaxy.
Hello, and welcome to the Epsilon 3, a Babylon 5 rewatch podcast. Each week, we review an episode of the 1990s sci-fi TV classic Babylon 5.
This week, Season 4, Episode 21, Rising Star.
I'm Paul.
I'm Dan.
I'm Sean.
And we are the Epsilon 3.
And the synopsis. Sheridan faces the consequences of his actions against Clark and Earth Force. And Marcus makes the ultimate sacrifice. Also, in other news, Delenn organizes the various races into a history-making alliance. Written by JMS and directed by Tony Dow, this episode was released on October the 20th, 1997, and takes place from November the 3rd to Defender to December 31st, 2261. The guest stars, Joey Dente as Luco, Denise Gentile as Lise Hampton, Rance Howard as David Shepard. Dear, I'm thinking of Mass Effect. David Sheridan, Michael Potter as General Foot, which sounds to me like Out of the Goons or something, or there's a comedy sketch. Ah, General Foot, yes. I'm here on behalf of Major Ake. Anyway, Beta Pozniak as President Susan Luchenko, Walter Koenig as Alfred Bester, J.J. Boone as MedTech, Alex Kobo as Max, whoever he was, Maggie Egan as Jane, the ISN anchor, and Julie Au as MedTech. Uncredited is good old Bill Blair as the alien. Just the one. So guys, what did we think of this episode?
I thought it was pretty fantastic, actually. If this was going to be the last episode of the series, what a way to go out on. It wrapped everything up very nicely. We got a lot of the guest stars. We got a really emotional performance from Ivanova, which was fantastic. Just overall, it was great. And we got to see Londo and Shakar, of course. I can't say enough good stuff about it. I enjoyed it.
Which is not the best news for a podcast talking about Babylon 5 rewatch. I mean, come on. You can't say enough. I mean, you've got to say more.
This was a horrible episode. I hated it. And boy, oh boy, am I glad this is the last episode I'll ever have to watch.
Dan, what did you think?
I don't know if I can do that. I mean, Sean's covered all the bases. What else is left to say? No, I enjoy a series that has a chance to wrap up all the arcs. Like, if it finishes, you have like a final episode and it kind of just says, yeah, everything was fine. These characters are here. This is the end. All good. So I enjoy that. There are some bits that sort of took me out throughout the episode, and we'll probably talk about them as we go. But, the performance from Ivanova's little story. So she's sort of sitting there and when she's just sobbing and how, Richard Briggs is also breaking down with Claudia Christensen. They're just such a great duo in that scene. Love it. Absolutely love it. Yeah, sad. We got to say goodbye to Marcus. We're not going to have Marcus again. I just generally do not remember this. Endgame was, like I say, last week, Endgame was the last episode I think I ever saw. I don't remember anything about this. All of the fallout, what actually happens, the Alliance, everything completely out of my head. Did not know this happened. So this was a nice surprise for me as well. So it's nice sort of watching a show I didn't really know anything about completely end. Great. Yeah, so I'm looking forward to season 5 if this was a good indicator. But if the way Sean's been selling it for the last 4 years, I don't think that's going to happen.
Oh, no, season 5 is fantastic. You just have to get past the first half.
Yeah, telepath war and a Drac war. Yeah, what could go wrong?
Nothing. It's fantastic.
How do you have a telepathic war? I knew you were going to do that. Oh, right.
It's lots of people staring intently at each other.
Yeah. Doing the hands. Okay, that's good. Well, yeah, I mean, I'm with you guys. It's an amazing episode, and it's great the way it finishes all the arcs off, and it makes you feel satisfied that the show's ended and we're not going to have any more.
Exactly.
Until we do. Anyway. ISN Network Special Report.
We can confirm now that President Clark took his own life at 2:53 a.m. EST rather than face trial for his actions. The body has been left in place for examination and documentation by the Justice Department. After the battle, Sheridan surrendered to Earth Force authorities, who will now decide whether or not charges will be pressed for his actions taken during and preceding the battle.
Acting President Susan Lutsenko urges the public to remain calm.
Despite Sheridan's current high standing in public opinion polls, his decision to act against his fellow officers must be explained and justified. In an impromptu press conference this morning, Acting President Susanna Lutsenko of the Russian Consortium urge the public to remain calm.
Do you realize that many of you want revenge against those who caused such great pain and suffering? We ask that you listen to the better angels of your nature.
Ivanova is still critically injured, and the president's thoughts go out to her.
Give the courts and the legal system time to locate and prosecute those responsible. Only a sane and careful study of the facts will allow us to separate those who were willing partners in President Clark's reign of terror from those who cooperated only in fear of their lives.
Our thoughts especially go out to Sheridan's second-in-command, Susan Ivanova, critically injured when Clark's forces attempted to ambush the multiplanetary fleet. The prayers of a grateful Earth go out to her.
Franklin is racing towards Babylon 5 to try and stop Marcus from using the alien device.
Spoiler alert, he's going to be a little bit late.
When he gets there to Babylon 5, he finds that Ivanova is alive and Marcus is all but dead. Marcus somehow managed to get past a number of security protocols that Franklin had put in place to hide the files about the alien device.
I was just lying there and I was feeling myself letting go of my body. And I remember the last thing that I thought was, I'm gonna die now. It wasn't so bad.
Ivanova had been ready to die when she heard somebody say, I love you.
And then I heard this voice coming from far away saying, I love you. And I thought, was this God? Is this God? I mean, he really did have an English accent, just like in all those old movies. And then I felt myself being pulled down and I got heavy, so heavy, and I'm tired, and I was forced my eyes open.
And she, when she woke, she found herself next to Marcus.
And there he was next to me. And we were hooked into that damn machine, and I tried to pull it apart, Stephen. I swear to God, I tried. I couldn't even move. I couldn't move.
Look, there was nothing that you could do, all right? Your system was traumatized. You can't blame yourself.
I don't.
She said that she has always had trouble with relationships.
You know, all my life I've had problems with relationships. You may have noticed.
A little.
You know, the ones that I loved always ended up hurting me. Or leaving me. The ones who stayed, they had nothing inside. No depth. After a while, I just decided to forget about it.
Then Marcus came along. She knew he would never hurt her or leave her, and that he loved her.
And here was Marcus. I knew he'd never hurt me. And I knew he'd never leave me. And I knew he loved me. I knew it. I just didn't want to admit it. And he gave so much and he wanted so little in return. He just wanted a kind word or a smile. And all I ever gave him in 2 years was grief. And it's because I think I saw what I wanted. And I was afraid.
Maybe she should just have boffed him once.
Maybe I should have just tried one more time. I could have done that for him. Now I can't. At least I should have boffed him just once.
Boffed? Did you just say boffed?
It's the type of thing he would have said. I mean, hell, it's not like I was doing anything else.
Well, I guess that's one way to deal with unrequited love, huh?
All love is unrequited, Stephen. All of it.
This is a reminder. Ooh. Bedtime.
Oh, sorry, Dan. Is it your bedtime now?
Sorry, my bedtime. Sorry, I've got to go now. Yeah.
Yeah, maybe she just should have bopped him one time.
I haven't heard that word since at least the mid-1970s. What the hell is he doing in this? Oh, dear. Anyway, Mallory and Jakar have a conversation about being early or late.
You're late?
No, you're early.
I am never premature.
Ah, well, that is a surprise, given what I've heard. I'm sure it's a matter of perspective, really, but for a noun, 2 minutes must be a long time. So if you go the duration, it's an accomplishment. But for the Centauri, hours can go by before you even get to the good parts.
Lando!
You're late.
They are interrupted by Veer, who has a message for Lando.
What is it, Veer?
I received a message from Homeworld just before I came here. Mm-hmm. The Regent is ill. They want you to come home.
What can I do? I am not a doctor.
It's much more than that, Lando. They say the Regent will leave us early in the coming year. When that happens, the Royal Court has decided that we need your voice to guide us. You're going to be Emperor, Lando. Isn't that wonderful?
Yes, Veer, wonderful news.
Lando, I thought you would
come. We really should hurry. Otherwise, we'll have to put up with a cranky Narn all the way to Earth.
Meanwhile, Sheridan is visited by Bester. Sheridan says he knows that Bester did to Garibaldi and uncovered a plot against the Psi-Corps. He says Mr. Garibaldi thinks he's guilty of a lot of things. Sheridan asks him about the virus, to which he denies all knowledge, but says if it did exist, the Psi-Corps would have got rid of the virus, but kept the antidote. Sheridan asks him about Lise Hampton, but Bester has no interest in her. What Bester does want to know is, was his lover one of the telepaths that was used against the Earth ships? And if she died being used for that purpose, Sheridan will not leave the room alive.
Using telepaths to take over ships from the other side was the hardest decision I ever made. I had Franklin go through their files, pick out the ones that were single,
no families, who were almost certainly incurable.
Carolyn is single. She has no family. The only thing we ever had was each other.
But death has no meaning for Sheridan.
I find it amazing that you think that threats still mean anything to me. Do this or you're a dead man? Death. Been there, done that.
Not a threat, Captain. Simply a statement of fact. I can have half a dozen sharpshooters cover this building at every exit. As soon as you poke your head outside, they'll put a bullet through it.
You know what the difference is between you and me, Bester? You use people because you like it. And if someone gets hurt in the process, well, that's life.
Sheridan knows what it's like to lose somebody.
Carolyn's still back at Babylon 5. She'll be transferred here as soon as things settle down.
Sheridan says he thinks that Bester will still try and take over the government. Maybe not now, but in a few years' time. Sheridan also says that Garibaldi will be finishing off a few bits and pieces on Mars, and then he'll probably turn his attention to Bester, and he wouldn't want to be in the room when he finds him. Shikar and Londo meet with Delenn. She already knows Londo will become Emperor. News travels fast in Babylon 5. She asks for their help to do something which Londo finds funny. He says that Delenn is quite mad in considering this. She then calls in the rest of the League worlds and ambassadors to tell them what she has in mind. The President of Earth wants to speak to Sheridan. She says that half of Earth Force wants to shoot him and half of Earth Force wants to give him a medal, so maybe she should do both.
I'll give it to you straight, Captain. President Clark was out of control. Many of us wanted to move against him, but the time was never right.
With all due respect, ma'am, while you were waiting, innocent civilians were dying.
There were issues of planetary security to consider. To look weak or disorganized would be to invite an invasion. We couldn't take that risk.
She couldn't move against him because Clark would know something was up.
His people were everywhere. He would have known instantly if we were up to something. Ironically, by breaking away, you were the only one who could move against him without his knowing what you were up to. That's why he was obsessed with you. Babylon 5 was outside his control. So yes, you saved some lives. I'm not here to argue ethics with you, Captain. Right or wrong, you led an insurrection against your own government.
She says that what you did was mutiny, maybe even treason.
That's mutiny at best. Treason at worst.
So morally I was right, but politically I'm inconvenient.
Inconvenient doesn't even begin to cover it.
She needs to clean up the mess, either with or without him. He says, what do you want me to do?
I've scheduled a press conference for tomorrow morning. I want you there. The event will be covered on ISN. You'll explain that you did what you did for the good of Earth. But your conscience does not permit you to remain an Earth Force any longer. You'll tender your immediate resignation, and I'll see to it you will retain your military pension with full honors. And I'll guarantee amnesty for your officers and crew who served under you during this crisis.
If he refuses, he will be court-martialed along with his staff.
You'll be dishonorably discharged, court-martialed, and brought to trial. Same for Ivanova and the rest of your staff. And I'll make sure that the military tribunal is stacked with generals from the shoot him category. Don't make the mistake of assuming that this is a conversation. It isn't. You have no other options.
He says so long as amnesty is in writing, he will resign.
Will you put the amnesty for my crew in writing? Resign.
Meanwhile, on Mars, there's a secret meeting going on. There's a knock at the door, and the leader of the group opens the door and pulls one of his underlings inside. When there is a second knock at the door, he sends one of the other gang to see what's going on. When they open the door, they find a box with a red button on it, and he brings it into the leader, who, being a bright spark, presses the button.
What's going on over there? The hell is that thing? Bring it on over here.
The box explodes. Then the walls explode, and people start rappelling down the walls. Led by Garibaldi, they attack the three guards and find Lise Hampton locked away in a cupboard, and they rescue her. It seemed a bit of overkill to me. There were three guards. All they had to do was knock on the door. They were going to open it. They could have just walked in.
You never know how many people are actually in there, though.
Well, yeah, that's true. Yeah, they were expecting an army, I think.
In some kind of little room, I guess? In the middle of where?
They must have had a very open ceiling because three of the guys rappelled down anyway, so they didn't need to blow in the door. There was no point.
I know, I didn't understand it, but whatever, it's funny.
Bizarre. Dilem has won the vote on the proposal. She said it will be she says it will be a historic day. Lanier asks Dilem about Marcus. She said he always blamed himself for the death of his brother, and maybe saving Ivanova's life was his way of finding redemption. Lanier asks if he had heard what Ivanova said at the end about all love being unrequited. She said she had heard it, and Susan was wrong. To which Lanier says, "Of course," but his face says, "You do not understand."
Foreshadowing.
Mm-hmm. Meanwhile, at the presidential suite, what do you mean, foreshadowing? Nothing happens. This is the last episode of the series.
Yeah, last one.
Nothing's going to happen.
Yeah, that's right. Books, novels, comics.
Yes, that'll be it. Meanwhile, at the presidential suite on Earthdome, in front of all of the ambassadors from Babylon 5, the president addresses the press conference.
Fellow citizens of Earth, honored guests, I've come before you today to commemorate those who have taken part in this recent struggle, who fought as they believed they had to fight. Their choice was an enviable one. Follow the orders of your superior officer in acts that violate your conscience, or rise up in opposition.
She says Sheridan's decision was a difficult one. She then introduces Sheridan, and he says that everything he did was out of love and duty for Earth.
Both sides have risked much and suffered greatly, but in the end, the battle they fought was the same: to protect and preserve an Earth they could proudly call home. Caught in the center of this particular whirlwind was a man of great integrity, honor, and courage. But his task was a difficult one. But he executed it with care to preserve the lives of his fellow officers. Despite what you may have heard, in his heart, he never left us. I give you Captain John J. Sheridan.
He says they all have choices, even if you don't recognize them.
As a young man, I joined Earth Force because I wanted to be part of something bigger than I was. Something that I could believe in. And that belief carried me through the Mars riots, the Mimbari War, and the battles that have brought us here today. Everything I did out of love of Earth and love of duty. But what happens when those two are no longer the same thing? Now, the time I spent on Babylon 5, I learned about choices and consequences and responsibility. I learned that we all have choices, even when we don't recognize them. And that those choices have consequences, not just for ourselves, but for others.
He says he takes full responsibility for those decisions.
We must assume responsibility for those consequences. I and my fellow officers had to choose between what we were told was right and what we believed was right. And now I take full responsibility for those decisions. I love Earth. And now for my love of Earth, I find I must walk away from my love of duty.
He then announces his resignation from Earth Force.
My presence would be a constant reminder of what has divided us.
instead of that which brings us together. And for that reason, and President Luchenko's generous offer of amnesty for all those who served under me, I am announcing my resignation from Earth Force. I do this in the hope that those who fought on both sides will put aside their disagreements and come together in a new spirit of cooperation. For we are all children of Earth. Thank you.
The League worlds then address the Council, and Jakar takes the stand. The new alliance will be based on mutual cooperation. He then hands over to Delenn. They will have the most advanced fleet of ships in existence.
They will help protect you from raiders and invasion by other races. They will work with your military to strengthen your borders. But understand that they will do so equally and fairly. If you are planning a war of aggression against your neighbors, the Rangers will hear about it, and so will your neighbors. If other worlds in the Alliance choose to intervene on behalf of those being attacked, the Rangers will provide the information, but will not intervene directly. Their goal is to create the peace, not enforce the peace.
Just then, the room starts to shake as a huge fleet of ships flies overhead. It's the Rangers. They are here to create the peace, not to keep it.
Finally, each member race will be able to contribute volunteers to join the Rangers, thereby assuring their independence and fairness. All of us have agreed to recognize the independent authority of the Rangers.
Although the President wants to join the new alliance, a lot of people underneath her are skeptical about their neutrality. In a gesture of good faith, the Minbari will share their technology, specifically artificial gravity on ships, negating the need to rotate the spaceships, for example, like Babylon 5. Now, I know Babylon 5 rotates, and I know some of the ships in the fleet rotated. Did the Agamemnon rotate as well?
I believe it did.
It's the central part rotates? And the...
Yeah, it had that big floppy part.
It is not a bit weird, because I hadn't really thought about this before, but if you're on the bridge, aren't you watching all the stars go round and round in a circle? And the same with Babylon 5. Yet when they look out the window, all the stars are stationary. They're not rotating round. Just a thought. I wonder if anybody else out there has found that at all. I don't know. I've been watching this for like a year and a half. You think I would have spotted it earlier on, but no. I think
the part where the command crew are doesn't move.
Well, if it doesn't move, then they'd be floating around.
Yeah, I know, but the station has a circular bit that rotates. I guess that makes gravity for the whole thing somehow.
I don't know, because because when you zoom in on the command center, it's not in the bit that rotates, is it? It's at the front.
Exactly. So it's residual gravity?
Unless it was built by...
Maybe.
It was built by aliens, and you wouldn't need the rotating bit. Oh, this is bizarre. Oh, I'm going to need to look this up.
It's taken us 4 years to get to this point of wondering, wait a minute, does that make sense? Yeah.
The president is tempted but needs to know who they're going to negotiate with. The three ambassadors, they're just the advisory board. What they have, though, is a duly elected president. Well, who's that going to be? Funny enough, somebody has just resigned from Earth Force.
You! Funny thing about retiring. You no sooner pick out the places you want to go on vacation than someone comes at you with another job offer.
Where's the certificate of amnesty?
Oh, that. I gave copies of that to the reporters outside, and the original is someplace safe.
You knew this was coming the whole time, didn't you?
The main thing was to protect my crew from retaliation. As for the new job, well, I was hoping the League Worlds would pull it together, but you never know.
Sheridan explains that the plot had been going on for quite a while.
I guess the war finally taught them that we are better together than apart. We've been building this thing up for months, bit by bit, making them rely more and more on the Rangers and each other. But if they decided against the Alliance or if they wanted somebody else, well, I was fine with that too.
The Interstellar Alliance has met with the Earth President.
Good evening.
We begin our broadcast tonight with a special report providing continuing coverage on the unfolding Babylon 5 story. President Susanna Luchenko met today with representatives of the newly formed Interstellar Alliance. In a historic move, Earth has agreed to join forces with the new alliance. In the same press conference, the newly elected president of the Interstellar Alliance, John Sheridan, had this surprising revelation.
The rights of the colony worlds must be respected.
In order to join the alliance, the rights of the colony worlds must be respected. If a majority of their population votes for independence, they must be freed. Later this afternoon, President Luchenko will sign an executive order declaring Mars a free and independent world.
Obviously, this will have to be ratified by the Senate.
Garibaldi and Lise seem happy, but they have no plans to get back to Babylon 5 anytime soon. Ivanova has been promoted to captain.
In related Babylon 5 news, in one of his last acts as an officer in Earth Force, Captain John Sheridan promoted Susan Ivanova to the rank of full captain. Citing the death of a close friend and other personal reasons, Captain Ivanova has asked for and received a transfer to one of the new Warlock-class destroyers for a one-year shakedown cruise. In a statement issued a few hours ago, Captain Ivanova said only, "I need to decide where my heart belongs before the rest of me can follow."
Sheridan and Delenn have been married and will remain on Babylon 5 until the Minbari homeworld can offer them a place to live.
After the press conference in Earthdome this morning, Sheridan and Delenn left for Babylon 5. It's rumored that they were married in a private ceremony aboard one of the White Star ships. Sources tell ISN they will head up the newly formed alliance from Babylon 5 until more permanent facilities can be located in Tuzanor on the Minbari homeworld.
Shikar is keeping an eye on the honeymoon proceedings, which is not bizarre at all.
As marriage ceremonies go, the humans are very strange indeed. Still, they are quite a couple, aren't they?
Yes, they are.
It almost makes you wish that you could peek in on them. See how it's going? Jakar. The artificial eye that Dr. Franklin gave you. Where is it?
No.
He's removed his eye.
30 years later, I don't think they would do that, but that's what you say, right?
I like the way it was out of the blue. There was no setup for that at all.
He just, the way he looks away from Malaria is to say, I'm not doing that. But he turns his face with the eye missing towards Malaria. You'd think he would either cover his eye or turn the other way or something. And then you see the eye on a shelf, as if nobody had noticed a flipping eyeball on the shelf. Is this your eyeball? No, look at mine. Jakar!
This is one of those secret meetings that Sheridan had with Jakar. That is the only proviso he asked for, is that I want to leave this on your shelf at a time of my choosing, and then you have to have it there. No reason. I'll just have it there.
It's exactly what Franklin said. You know, you can remove your eyes, and you could leave it lying around, see things. He goes, yeah. He's thinking of secret wars, secret, you know, all these Malari's room. You know, no, he wants to perv on the flipping captain and Delenn. So anyway, enter Delenn's clip at 41 minutes. And that's the end of the series. It certainly felt like it. All the arcs have been nicely sewn up and tied up. And everybody's happily ever after.
That's right. What more could there be except for this promo for another podcast right here on the ESO Network?
Hi, I'm Joe Heath.
I'm Tony Heath.
And we host the Watchathon of Rassilon,
a podcast where we're watching through all of classic Doctor Who.
Nope, we've already done that.
We did? Well, then now what do we do?
What do we two do? We review New Who.
Ooh, we two review New Who?
We do, just for you.
Who?
Not you, them, the listeners of the podcast.
Ah.
The Watchathon of Rassilon.
Now we review New Who too.
Woohoo!
And on to the trivia. J. Michael Straczynski has said that if he'd known ahead of time that Claudia Christian would not be returning for the final season, he would have rethought his decision to kill off Marcus, as he was an extremely popular character. Marcus Cole's final fate was concluded in a short story written by JMS and published in Amazing Stories number 602. In brief, 400 years after he gave his life for Susan Ivanova, Marcus Cole, still preserved in cryogenic suspension, is revived when the home planet of those who built the life energy transfer machine is found. He discovers that Susan Ivanova never married and lent her personality matrix and memories to a library on Earth. Lent. Marcus creates a clone of Ivanova and then imprints her memories into the clone's brain. He then strands them both on an uncharted world with a tropical climate, far from any shipping lanes. When Ivanova, in inverted commas, wakes, she has no memory of anything after the battle with the shadow-enhanced destroyers sent by President Clark. Marcus tells her that they crash-landed en route to a ranger base. The two of them live happily ever after, in inverted commas. Marcus Cole's actions are of dubious morality, but Straczynski has been quoted as wishing to give the character the happy ending he deserves. Well, there you go. And that's the only trivia this week. So, Sean, are there any Star Trek connections?
Well, Paul, no, there's not. Nothing new. Just Walter Koenig as Alfred Bester, but no new Star Trek connections.
Very good. Yeah, I couldn't find any either, so that's pretty much because they brought everybody else back. It seems to be a modern thing I've noticed more recently, but they have obviously been doing this since mid-90s, where in the last season or the last episode, they start bringing in characters that have, you know, been used maybe in the early seasons or even in the early episodes and you know, give them a nice little sort of sending off and you know, bring them in to say thank you for being part of the show and all this. So, Okay, let's move on to our ratings. We rate our episodes out of five for five jump gates. And IMDb scored theirs out of 10. They have given this 8.5. 8.5, which would be 4.25, of course. So, Sean, what did you make of this episode?
Well, like I said at the beginning, I really liked it. It wrapped everything up. We got to see John's dad. We got to see Susan's emotions. Even Dr. Franklin wasn't annoying in this episode, and Garibaldi wasn't bad either. Everything was great, and it's wrapped up. And I liked the accent of the Earth president. That was fun. And I think I'm going to give it a 5.
Wow. Two fives in a row, that show.
I know.
Dan, what did you think?
Yeah, as I said at the beginning, I appreciate it when a series does actually wrap up some stories and it gives itself an ending. So had a season 5 not come along, this would have been very satisfying and we could have just swept everything out. Garibaldi gets a happy ending, which he's needed for the whole four seasons. And it's been set up that he's been this tortured personality and everything like this. Yes, Franklin was not annoying, although there was the scene at the very beginning when he's on the White Star commanding it and he's sitting in the commander's chair just like muttering to himself going, must go faster, 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 faster. I'm just wondering, are all the Minbari just kind of staring at him like it's not going to go any faster just because you're saying it? He's just sitting there in the chair in a massive bridge, everyone just staring at him. So that kind of took me out of the episode, that part. Another bit that took me out of the episode, when they're rappelling down, even though they've just blown in the door, it made, like, if they were already knew they could get in, why did they need to do the door bit? And the really dumb stereotypical gangsters pressing the button on the obvious grenade that is in their hands. But I did like the fact that it had like a, you know, the Bugs Bunny sound effect playing in it as well. Yeah, there are some little details and things that it kind of threw me out. The president, wonderful voice, great actress. It did really feel like she was looking for her directions the whole way through the episode for me. It was very deliberate. And we were sort of speaking before we did recording, and Paul was quite rightly mentioning this is her second language. So, of course, that is always going to be a thing. She's struggling to have, you know, the English translation of what she's reading, perhaps. But for me, I wanted someone a bit more dynamic in that president role, someone who was a bit more fluid, perhaps someone we'd already seen fighting against Clark in the background from the previous episodes, like Paul was saying, that, you know, a character we'd already seen back in season 1 or something, or just from last week, Caroline Seymour, the one who found the scorched earth note. Wonderful actress, British actress. She would have been fantastic as the president. And I think she could have had a really good rapport with Sheridan and maybe Delenn and maybe Jakar and Londo and so on. And so I just feel like that didn't really come across for me. It wasn't the dynamic Earth president I kind of wanted to see take over. There's so much I like about the episode, but again, it doesn't really pack a big punch for me. So it's not going to be a perfect five. It's going to be a little bit lower than IMDb, though. I think it's going to be a round four out of five.
Wow. Okay. Yes, I am totally with you on this one there, Dan. It was, you know, it started out as a five and it was going towards a five, heading nicely towards a five. And then, yeah, the president didn't quite click, but then in some respects, I can forgive her for that because maybe that's just the president. Yeah, like you say, she could well be. She's actually talking in a third language because she's putting on a Russian accent, but she's Polish. So her accent is Polish, but she's Polish putting on a Russian accent to speak in English. So yeah, but her direction wasn't very good. She didn't know where she was looking, what she was saying. There was no emotion in the voice. I think it was very flat. However, having said that, she is a very accomplished voice actress and does voiceovers in a lot of games I've played. So she, obviously at some points, yeah, she must be doing something right with the voice. So maybe she's just not used to the sort of cameras. I don't know. I'm guessing. I'd have to look it up.
I chalked it up to her being thrust into the role of president and not being quite sure of herself exactly.
Yeah.
So that's how I justified it.
Yeah, she's like a low-level senator who survived the purge. Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah. It's like there's a TV series about that, isn't it? I can't remember. It's Kiefer Sutherland the vice president, and then the vice president gets killed, and he gets jumped up into president. He's not ready for it, and all that. I've forgotten the name of it now.
But anyway, Designated Survivor.
That's the one. So I was going to watch that. I think I watched the first episode, and I just didn't get the time to.
Never saw it.
To get into it. Yeah. Okay. So, I'm with Dan totally on that. However, I thought it was nice the way all of the arcs were finished. They were finished correctly. I think it was a little bit forced a bit too quickly with Jakar and Londo. They were all happy and, you know, like a joke and a laugh. Maybe there's been a bit more time passed over the last two episodes than just a couple of weeks. It's hopefully a few months maybe. And they've managed to reconcile a little bit more, but I suppose if he's going to be the last in the season, then yeah, you can finish it off and say, yeah, okay. And they became friends, knowing that they're going to kill each other in 20, 30 years time or whatever it is anyway. So.
Oh yeah. I didn't see it as them being friendly. I just saw it as Jakar playing a role of I see where this is going. I'm going to bide my time.
Yeah,
I'll be the friendly guy until.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, he is playing the part of the ambassador. He's being political and just like you say, waiting. So yeah. So for that reason, I'm going to give it a 4.95 because it just wasn't quite there as a five for me. However, it does make it my. Well, spoilers for next week, my favourite episode in this season. So, can't be all bad. Okay. Excellent. Anything else would anybody like to bring up at all?
Did anyone feel like maybe President Clark was right? Like, the way that they presented the fact that they've got this new alliance is they fly every white star over all of the buildings very menacingly. Like, yeah, you can join this alliance. You want to join this alliance, don't you? Yeah. We've got this massive fleet over your heads. You want to join this alliance? Oh, yeah. It was a bit threatening. Like, if we've been learning anything from the last 4 years, ISN could easily have twisted some of this into a different kind of story of like, maybe he was under alien influence all along and did Clark have a point? Like, you know, if they were going to do a season five, they could have easily done it where Bester is twisting everything to make it seem like, well, they flew an entire fleet over our heads. Of course we were going to say yes. I don't know, if you reread that scene, it looks very menacing. Like, Delenn is standing there at the podium as the light darkens, as the amount of ships go over their head, just like the shadows did when they took over on Centauri. It, very interesting visuals. Let's just go with that.
And great timing, too.
Yes. Yeah, very good timing.
Well, yeah, it's like any American sports thing where they fly, the red arrows or whatever, they all fly over the thing just at the perfect time. I thought the same thing. I thought I couldn't, as she was saying it, Dylan was saying, and they're here to, and I was waiting for her to say, keep the peace. Thinking they are going to police the, not so much police, but they're going to keep the peace. And if anything starts coming up, the rangers, they can get in there and quell it and keep it quiet, and maybe a quiet word or a big staff around somebody's head or whatever. But then she said they're going to create the peace, not keep the peace. I thought, well, hang on a minute, how are they going to create it? The same way, surely. So I don't know. It was a bit of a weird sentence, the way they used it. They could have turned that around either way. They're here to keep the peace, not create it. The peace has already been created by us creating this alliance, surely. And then the Rangers look after that. But it seemed to imply it was going to be the other way around. But it's very, very strange. I'm twiddling my thumbs here. We've still got a bit of time. I'm trying to find where the post was that I put out, and I got a lot of replies from a guy.
It was also nice to see Sheridan's dad, of course. They finally get realized that no one had told him that he was all right after that big torture scene episode. So bring him in, little cameo, nice.
Yeah, that's right. It's and we got that scene that we said that we should have, which is he's got his arms around Dylan and Sheridan as they walk off down the corridor, and that's the bit they should have put in when they said, "And we've rescued Dad, and hey, let's go." Okay. So, a little bit of feedback. I'm going to have to apologise because obviously the gentleman's name. I think I've got it right. It's about the episode Intersections in Real Time. That's obviously the one where Sheridan gets interrogated right the way through, and I got a lot of comments from this on on the Babylon 5 Facebook page, where I posted the fact that we have the podcast, and I say this week we've posted this podcast. Gordon Vincent said it's a brilliant tough watch. Villa Pecker, apologies Villa, but the your surname is Persianian. I apologize for that. I shouldn't have even attempted that. He says it's one of the best. I keep coming back for this one. And then Gustavo Carmona came in with a most incredible bit of feedback. He said, I hope it doesn't mind me reading this out. I found this episode of, and again, apologies. He's from Cuba, so his English is good, very good. But I'm going to read it as he's written it. I found the episode of, the series, quite believable, even with the sci-fi touch. I was born in Cuba. My father served 15 years as a political prisoner. He told me a way they would try to break you was sleep deprivation by playing several recordings of different music, pro-communist or propaganda. That whole period on the show where the enemy was your own nation spoke volumes to me as well. Night Watch, for instance, was your neighborhood. Once a month, we would meet for weekly meetings where gossiping on your neighbors for the good of the state was the rule. The schools were also affected. Teachers would ask students to tell them things that went on in the household. If it sounded like a how does it go anti-revolutionary, the state would arrest the parents and the children would be placed in the state-run orphanage until the parents are programmed to be good. Communist are programmed to be good communist or be taken to other adults where the state would make sure the adults walk the line. My parents told me they would wait until my brother and I would go to sleep to talk openly or listen to American radio in an act that is quite illegal. Now, I replied to that saying, wow, what can I say? We are lucky that we have never had to go through that in the UK. Even my parents never experienced that, although my grandparents did live through World War II. Thank you for sharing your and your parents' experience of real life in Cuba. And I'm sure this happens in other countries as well. It is a necessary reminder to the lucky people that some places in the world are not as free as others. TV shows like Babylon 5 keep the horror of war and government regimes in people's minds, lest we forget. Thank you so much for your comments, and I hope you enjoyed the podcast. He then came back said, "You are quite welcome. When my family and I moved to the States across the pond, had a girlfriend from England in the early 1980s in Miami Beach. Most of my neighbors were Jewish and many were Holocaust survivors. So that particular period in time is quite personal to me. Years later, I discovered the nation that saw my eyes open betrayed their fellow neighbors by refusing the SS St. Louis to dock on the island, thereby saving the life of its 500 Jewish passengers. Instead, turned them around to their uncertain death. Years after that, I joined the Freemasons and discovered alongside their Jewish neighbors, members of the Freemasons were also placed in concentration camps. Today, beware the forget-me-not pin, which not only reminds us of those that were lost in the hands of fascism, but never again. As to your grandparents, I would love to hear their story. Their stories should be taught in school." And that's how I absolutely agree with that. I did think a while back, I think it might have been one of Sean's friends who had the idea of recording older people's stories and putting them onto podcasts and therefore keeping them forever as just stories, just about what did you do in the house? You know, what did you... You know, we're driving down the road, what was it like, and all this type of thing. Yeah, so even if they're just funny stories that, you know, that you've heard many times and you're, you know, you say, oh, granddad's telling that story about when he fell over in the street next to a landmine or something, you know, whatever, you know, anything like that. I mean, I know a story about a guy who drove a truck and had a tank on the back of it during World War II, went around a corner far too quick, spun the turret around, and it knocked the tank off the truck. They didn't realise until they got back to actually where they were supposed to deliver it. And pulled up and said, "Here's your tank," and there was nothing on the back. That sort of story should be told. You know, those sort of things should be kept for, you know, eternity. Some of them, because this was a guy, and I should have recorded it. I should have said, "Do you mind me recording this? Because it sounds like it's going to be a really good story." Because the way he told it as well was just, you know, brilliant. You know, it was so funny. So stories like that should be kept. And I did think about doing a podcast about it, but it's a lot of hard work and. Sadly, left it too late for some people. I could have spoken to the last surviving Spitfire pilot from World War II. I, you know, could have interviewed a few people, but never really got the opportunity. So, that's just one of those things. But thank you, Gustavo, for the kind words and brilliant feedback. And my goodness, that is powerful, powerful stuff.
Yeah.
So, okay, I think that's the end of this episode. Join us again next week when we will be reviewing season 4. So as we said last week, we will not be reviewing whatever the hell that last one was called, the Deconstruction of Falling Stars. That is the last episode we will watch of everything because that's where JMS likes to place it. So we'll do a season 4 review next week, and then we'll jump into season 5 after a bit of a break. So join us next week.
It was the end of the Earth year 2261, and it was the dawn of a new age for all of us. It was the end of one chapter and the beginning of another. The next 20 years would see great changes, great joy and great sorrow. The Telepath War and the Drak War. The new alliance would waver and crack, but in the end it would hold. Because what is built endures, and what is loved endures. And Babylon 5 endures.
If you have any thoughts on this episode, why not send in some feedback to the epsilon3@gmail.com. That's 3 spelled T-H-R-E-E, not the number. Or you can find us on our Facebook page. Just search for the Epsilon 3.
Now, if you have any other problems, any other questions at all, just ask.
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network. Be part of the crew and help support our shows by donating to our ESO Patreon or by shopping for the TeePublic store, which can all be found at www.esonetwork.com. The ESO Network, your station for all things geek.